This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our special guest is Josh Turner, old friend from Paranormal Roundtable, my all-time favorite podcast. It is literally the one-stop shop for all things paranormal. They touch on all the key aspects, and to me, these guys, Anthony, the whole crew, they're at the cutting edge. And whenever I recommend it, a podcast, if I can only recommend one podcast, it is Paranormal Roundtable. So without any further ado, Josh, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
How's it going?
Let's go good.
Yeah,
Eons.
glad to be here.
Well, just like I said right before we started, I know what it's like when people tell you or ask you when you're being interviewed to tell a story or how you got into all this, but I've never heard your first encounter with a dog man, which got the whole ball rolling, and then why you are one of the top researchers in our field today. So, if you don't mind, just a bit about your background, and then tell us about your encounter with the dog man, which brought you to this state.
Well, I've told this story so many times, but I got to tell you, I don't think I've ever told it on my show. I really don't. When you were talking about this earlier, we were backstage. I was like, I can't remember. I don't think I've told it on my show, but I've told it on so many other channels and stuff. So yeah, I was 15 years old, and my family, my mom's side is Hispanic and Native American, and she's basically half Mexican, half Comanche, and my dad's side is he's white, but not just white, but his European side is Scotch Irish, well, Scottish mostly, and then he's got Cossack on the other side of his mom's side. And so I don't know how many people know what that is, but that's like they're from in between Ukraine, Russia, whatever. And they're kind of a weird genetic anomaly there in that region because they don't really mi mix in with the Slovaks. And that's because the prevailing theory is that they were like Vikings that kind of got lost there and just said, you know what, we like this land, we're just going to take it. And it's kind of what they did. But they all had like different weird traditions. And I was privileged to know my dad's mother who died when he was 3 years old. So she died when he was really young, but I got to know his her brother Buck, and he talked about these creatures when I was a little kid. I remember when I was like 6 or 7, and I remember him talking about these things. He called them boogers, and they were like Bigfoot. And so then, a little bit after that, my great great uncles on my dad's side, on the Turner side, I remember talking to them and them telling me that there was a whole story in the region that they lived in, which was about 40 miles away from my dad's mother's side, and them talking about these creatures that were like Bigfoot, but they didn't really think that they were like apes. They thought that they were something kind of evil. They were like they were gray faced, and they looked like the way they described them was hairy, evil cavemen, and that they had done a lot of bad things, And so I was just like, I guess I was probably 7 or 8 when I heard all that, because I told him, yeah, Uncle Buck told me. And so my great great uncles, never missing a chance to scare the hell out of a kid, they like, oh yeah, there's some evil damn, monsters down there by that holler. You and your cousins need to stay away from that, And so I just thought, you know what? These old people are just trying to tell me stories to scare me. That's what I always thought. I think that's how I dealt with it. I was like, yeah, they're just, And I was living in Haskell, and I would come and I would stay in the summertime, and then every Thanksgiving we would alternate. We would go to out to my dad's mother's side, and then the next year we go to my dad's side. And when we went to my dad's side, they ate lunch early, and then we'd go to my mom's side. So you would do two Thanksgivings every other year. So when I would go to them, they had all these stories, Hispanic stories, like Manos Peludos and the Hairy Hand. It's all this, these weird, creepy stories and La Llorona. And I remember also when I was a kid, I hated doing it when I was real young, But I really, really hated it when I was a teenager. We had to drive down to San Juan, to the mission down in South Texas. And it was a 6-hour drive, and I was so bored. And my tia Jova started telling me, it was my mom's aunt, started telling me these stories, me and my siblings, about the, she's Catholic. My mom had converted. She wasn't Catholic anymore. She was Baptist. And so I remember hearing these stories. And I told my mother 1 year after the trip, I said, you know, we go down there to San Juan to light these candles. And tia always tells me these stories about the carejo and the hombre lobo. And all the La Lachuza, the Chupacabra. And I told her, I said, is this mentiras? You know, what is this? Is this real? You know? And she was like, well, what do you think? And so I said, you know what? I think it's all BS. Because you got my Uncle Buck telling me stories. You got my Uncle SD and JC telling me stories. And then you got her telling me these things. So I just said, you know what? They're all full of crap. They're all just full of crap, dude. I don't believe it, you know? And so my mom's sister, she was real big into the paranormal. And I remember she had a book that she was reading. I was like 9. And it was, Edward Cohen, I think his name was. It was about monsters. And I read it, and it didn't intrigue me enough to go, oh man, that's fascinating. I'm really into that. I just did it again. I just was like, you know, it's just more bull crap. You know, and so my tia started telling me about Brad Steiger. She was like, yeah, this guy, he, you know, years later, I was a teenager. She's like, check out this book. You know, it's pretty good. And then I read some of, what's his name from The Mothman. God, I try to remember his name, the author. John Keel. There you go. Thank you. So I read some John Keel, but you know, you go to the library and there really wasn't a lot to choose from. I mean, we didn't have the internet when I was a kid. You know, when we were kids, we didn't have the Gen Xer like me. And so I just, it was kind of a passing interest, but I didn't really buy into it. And so my tias would tell me, because my abuelita, my grandmother on my mom's side, died when I was a little bitty. I was like 2. So I didn't really know her. And they would always tell me these things are real. But my dad's mother, even though she was deceased, my dad had a stepmother. And she was the only real grandmother I had. So she was Czech, right? She was like Czech and a little bit of German. And her family grew up around Granger, Texas. And I remember this very profoundly. We were out in West Texas one time. And I lived in Haskell, right? And there were stories about this creature called the Haskell Rascal. And I just thought, you know, this is just... all these people just want to scare me. And I didn't put it together in my little mind. Like, all these people are telling me these different stories. Maybe there's some truth to it. Because I think maybe either it was like I didn't want to accept it, you know, because I didn't want to be scared. Because I was a latchkey kid. My parents worked all the time. I was alone a lot. And my siblings were always doing like school activities and stuff when I was young. I was the youngest. I was by myself a lot. And so I didn't accept it. I was like, you know what? If I don't accept this, then maybe it's not real. And so we were out in West Texas in Marfa. And my grandfather, we were going through Pinto Canyon from Marfa to Candelaria in Mexico. And my grandfather, my dad's side, he's a goofy old white redneck. And he scared the crap out of me. He was a truck driver. And he says, you know, he called me Josh Boy. You know, Josh Boy, out here, there's these people that they can turn into coyotes. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like 10 years old or something. I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, I've seen them. And I've seen things that look weird, you know? And my grandmother was like, JD, stop it. You're going to scare him. You know, he doesn't want to believe in all that. And I told my grandmother, you know, my dad's stepmom. And I said, Grandma, is that real? Did he really see this? She goes, well, when you get a little older, I'll tell you about it. She goes, but I don't think you need to be hearing about this. She'd always change the subject. And my grandfather didn't care. He didn't give a crap if you were scared or not. He said, yeah, tell him what happened in Alexandria, Louisiana. And I said, what happened in Alexandria? She's like, JD, he's too young to be hearing that. And so he said, we saw a damn werewolf. It literally was on the side of the road and it stood up on its hind legs. It looked like a cross between a hyena and a wolf and a man right there in the swamp. And I looked at my grandmother for confirmation to tell me like, hey, this didn't really happen. I'm like, and she's like, no, that really happened. And she kind of looked at my grandfather's, consternation, like, what is, why are you doing? It's like, so I had been fed this diet of these stories and I rejected it. I just chalked it up to these older people are telling me all these stories because it's to scare kids so that you'll behave. It's like going to San Juan. And by the time you get to the mission, you're lighting candles like crazy because you're scared. You're scared of La Llorona, you're scared of La Chusa. You're scared of the hairy hand coming and grabbing you. And so when I hit my early teens, all that stuff went out the window and I was sneaking out of the house. I was doing all kinds of stuff. I got locked up a couple times by that point. By the time I was 13, 14, I'd already been locked up twice. And I wasn't done. I got locked up two more times. So I was a delinquent, right? So I was 15 years old. And my mother, and I had put all that stuff out of my mind. I didn't believe any of it, right? And my mother tells me, it was Halloween night, 1990. And she says, you have a curfew. Be home by 11. Now, that's a very liberal curfew for most kids, 15 years old. But she knew what kind of a delinquent I was, probably the best she could get out of me. And the kids in my hometown of Taylor had a tradition, because I was living in Central Texas again at this time. And they had a tradition, and it was we would throw eggs at cop cars on Halloween. And it was bad. Like, it made the paper every year, like thousands of dollars in damage done to property. The police are looking, and they never did. A couple kids would get in trouble, but all the kids were doing it. If you were like 12 to 18, you were throwing eggs at the cop cars. It was nuts. It was like a tradition, and then it died out of, actually I found out it just died out about 10 years ago. So it was still going on when Anthony was a kid. That's my co-host over here, my nephew. And so that was like what I was doing. And my mother told me, don't be throwing no huevos at the policia, whatever. And I said, yeah, whatever. And she was just like, and then she made this statement I'll never forget. She's like, if you're out there doing bad, you're going to see the devil. That's what she told me. She said, you're going to see the devil, Diablito. You're going to see it. I was like, wow, you're going to tell me that, Mom? Really? So we got to a little exchange, whatever. And I said, oh, I love you too, Mom. And I just walked out with my friends. And we went and got a ride with my friend Juan. And then we went and we did what we did. We went over by Davis Street and we threw cop eggs at the cop cars. And we ran through the fields back there. And we'd run back and throw more eggs. And so anyways, long story short, it's about 10:45 and I'm getting dropped off at my friend's house. And then I look and we're talking and his mother is there. My friend Daniel's mother who saw the thing with me. And she says, mijo, because she had a real bad diabetic. And she says, I can't give you a ride. I can't see, and she was like, and the last time she had given the keys to my friend to drive, he didn't come back for 2 hours. He ended up at his girlfriend's house. She was like, she's like, Sal, that was his dad. She's like, he's not going to let him take the car. And she goes, but your mom's already called and said, if you don't make it home by 11, you're in big trouble. So I called my mother. And it was at that point, I looked at the clock. It was 5 after. I told my mother, I said, Mom, can you come? She's like, hell no. Nope. Nope. And then we got into it and she's like, Cállate, walk up in the hole, you walk. Hung up the phone on me. So I go down to the corner store. I'm in trouble. I know I'm going to be grounded and probably who knows what else. And so I'm just like walking, I just remember holding one of those big 32 ounce or 44 ounce drinks, whatever, from Circle K, complaining to my friend Daniel about how, my mom was just so mean. Looking back on it, it's like, dude, I was a delinquent, right? So I'm walking up the street and I get to the corner and it was Talbot Street, which is interesting because, Talbot, that's the wolf man, right? Lawrence Talbot. And so I'm standing there at the corner and I still remember it very clearly. And our friend John Michael lived at the end of the street there, and in the ditch right there by his house, I remember seeing this black, what I thought was a dog. And the neighbors at that time, they had like a black, like a German Shepherd or something. And I thought that was her. And I, and there again, you're just trying to convince yourself that you're not seeing what you're seeing. And I was complaining, whatever, And I remember like my friend saw it first, like he put his arm up, and I stopped and like, when I was talking, he put his arm up and he, like that. And I just started staring at it with him. And as we stared at this thing, it was doing something. I don't know, like it looked like it might've been digging or something. It was in a ditch. And, I looked at my friend Daniel and I was like, what is it? And he goes, the dog. And I said, I looked at it and I took a few more steps. And then I said, Dad, that's a wolf, dude. Look at that. It's a big black wolf with a big old head. You know, it didn't look natural at all. And I said, that's not my friend's dog. I said, that's not Misty. I don't know what that is, you know? And I don't remember what John Michael and then they had a couple dogs too, but their dogs are always barking. And so this thing being in front of their, you know, in the ditch, you know, in my friend's house, there was a big yellow and brown house right here to the left. And then next to his house next to that house was my friend's house. And those people had a big old fence and they had been raided. It's a bad neighborhood. It's the barrio, you know, and they had been raided. And they had a big 8-foot fence that the city had made them put up because they had pit bulls running around loose. Well, they had the pit bulls because they were selling drugs, right? Selling crack. But this neighbors or whatever were gone. They had been raided. They'd been evicted. So nobody was living in that house. And so it was an abandoned house. And it sat there for a while in disrepair. And I'm sitting there. I'm looking at this thing. And I'm like, what is this? And my instinct, you know, was to like, you know, you see a dog, you're walking as a kid, you know, and you're in this rural town, whatever. A lot of people let their dogs run around. Oh, my, he won't hurt you. Old Rex won't hurt you. And he'll literally tear your testicles off. But, you know, whatever. No, he's a good dog. He looks like a good dog, right? Yeah. These are country people, dude. They don't give a shit.
He's never ripped off anyone's nuts before his first time.
Yeah, I can't believe he did that. You know, I mean, you're only the fourth person that he's torn a limb from, you know. But they were people that would let they'd have Doberman Pinschers, German Shepherd, whatever, Rottweilers running around loose, pit bulls. And so you pick up a rock, and a lot of times you'll act like you're going to throw it or something. You don't even have to throw it. And I don't want to throw rocks at dogs. I love dogs. And so I thought maybe I'd scare it. Well, this thing didn't get scared. And we both kind of like had a rock, you know, and we were going to, you know, but this thing didn't balk at all. And then when it turned, it's like it noticed us, like it turned its head and looked right at us. And I don't remember eye shine or anything like that. I just remember this big old massive head on a big pair of shoulders. And I told my friend, I said, that is not a dog. And it stood up like a man and it had hind legs like those, you know, the curved, you know, backward bent hawk, you know, like a canine. And it just walked across the road, like, you know, and I was like, oh, you know, crap. And I stood there and, you know, time starts to kind of slow down. You know, the Japanese, they call it Satori, where you just kind of everything is going really slow. And I'm standing there and I just looked down and I remember like the drink I had was this big Dr. Pepper. It was laying on the ground. The ice was spilled everywhere. And my friend was with me and he was just like gone. And I just felt this burning, stinging pain in my neck. And I was like, what in the hell is that, dude? And I look and my shirt was ripped. And I was like, what in the hell? And my friend was like, I look to my left and he's like almost to his house. And I was like, I was still stunned. I was still kind of, you know, just kind of trying to contemplate what I needed to do. And what did I just see? Like, it's like everything I had been told was coming true right then and there. Like, it's real. All these stories that I had been told as a kid that I put out of my mind and just said, nah, it's not real. Because we always lived out in the country for the most part until I moved into town with my mom. My mom and dad divorced and she moved us into the barrio, you know, and I'm over here like, this is a culture shock for me anyway, you know, living like this, because I had 15 years, I'd always lived out in the country. And so living out in the sticks, you don't want to hear that Bigfoot and werewolves are real because that's terrifying. So you put it out of your mind, you know? And so I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of stunned, not really moving. And I heard a voice talking to me. That was my friend. And it just kind of snapped me back to reality. And I just was like, I need to go. So I started walking, you know, on wobbly legs toward, you know, my friend's house. And remember, there's like this big house right there with this fence around it. And I remember, like, as I started walking, this creature came from the back part of the yard of this house. So I guess it came between the houses, you know. But it ended up in the fence in part. And thank God it did, because it wasn't able to, you know, just run up on me. And it was physical, right? At least I thought it was. And it came up to that fence and it was kind of judging the fence and looking up and down. And I got a good look at it at that point, maybe 12 feet away at that point. 12 to 15 feet, I would say. And I don't know exactly, but it was big. It was about 7.5 feet tall, you know, massive shoulders, big. I mean, if I had to estimate 600-700 pounds, unnatural bulk, like it didn't need like to be that big. You know what I mean? It was like, what is it? Why is this so big and heavy? Why does it have so much muscle? And I don't remember a tail, you know. I thought I did at one point. I was trying to, but maybe it was somebody trying to tell me about it, you know, maybe because one of my friend's siblings had said they thought they remembered a tail. I didn't see it. I don't know. And I don't remember eyes shine, you know, like I don't remember them shining. And I've taken so many stories over the years, you know, I've tried to make sure that they don't really pollute my memory, you know? And so I don't remember at this point, you know, it's been so long. 1990s, like what, 36 years ago? What is that? You know, so you're just going like, geez, dude, this is a long time ago. But I remember it though. I do remember. And I was walking, and then my friend, his dad came out, and he was holding, you know, a 12 gauge. And he just looked at this, you know, he looked at me, he's like, Andale, remember that guy, you know? And so I took off running, you know, and I ran up to, I just ran past it. And I got in the house. And I sat on the couch, and it wasn't over because my friend's family was looking out the window, the kitchen window or the dining room window, were both, you know. And this thing was walking around outside the house, and they saw it, and they were like, oh, what the hell is that? You know, and they were freaking out. And my friend's dad got a good look at it. Like he was, you know, for years he, you know, so my brother was in the Army. And years later, he loved to always tease me and mess with me. He says, I was in Michigan, you know, because his stepdad, his stepdad, like he had them living in Michigan along with his mother, because he's my half brother, right? And I remember him coming, getting out of the Army and coming to live with me back in the mid to late 90s. And we lived in this house. It was haunted as hell, that house, I'm telling you. 10 years I lived in that. The house was messed up. But we were living in that haunted house and weird stuff happened. And my brother was like, why don't you tell him about the werewolf? You know, these people that were renting from us, you know, these friends of ours. And we started talking about it. And my brother and me got really curious about it. So we went to the library. I had already gone to the library. And I told him, I said, there's nothing about these creatures. I don't know what, you know, these werewolves. There's nothing. It's just the myths. That's all there was, you know. And a few people had claimed to have seen them, not much. And my brother said, well, up in Michigan, you know, there was a bunch of them. The people were always talking about when I was growing up. The Michigan, they called the dog man. And so some time goes by and we started to meet people who had claimed to have seen these things, but they didn't call them dog man down here. They called them werewolves. And we went to this place called the Devil's Backbone and we interviewed several people that had seen these creatures. But there again, they didn't ever call them dog man. But my brother said, yeah, hey, you know, in Michigan, they call him the dog man, you know. And so my brother had a friend who passed away. He would claim to have seen one in the woods one time when they were teenagers. So my brother liked to tease me and say, oh, yeah, you know, it didn't happen that way. Y'all just saw a big rabbit and ha-ha, jokey, kind of whatever. So one day, him and my friend Willie, who's passed away, and my friend Scorpion, and my friend Jerome, we all went to Taylor on a trip. And we took my friend's SUV, and I took them to go eat barbecue and whatever. And I took them to my friend Daniel's house. He was no longer living there. He was living with his girlfriend, but his mother was there. And I was very close with his family because I lived with them for a while. And I said, Martha, can you tell them what happened that night? And she said, I'm only going to tell you this once. She's a Pentecost, very religious woman. She's like, this was the diablo, the devil. And it came. For him and my son. She really believed that. She believed that. But my friend eventually turned to Christianity and became a preacher now in my hometown. He's a preacher and he's very staunch in his faith. So before she died, she got to see him become a man of the cloth. And that was such a transformation because him and me were both going out of jail. We were kids. And so he told the story. He retold the story when we were after we buried her when she died in 2010 or 2011. And so, yeah, it was it, that I remember, you know, early 2000s, I guess it was early 2000s, and her telling that story to my friends and my brother. And she told my brother, she goes, "Don't make fun of him because that's real. That really happened." She's like, "Yeah, we saw this creature." And it coincided with everything I said. So years later, fast forward years later, and Anthony, you want to say hi? He's here in the studio.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
His younger brother, Palito, was graduating. Mm-hmm. And we ran into Danny Robles.
Yeah.
And me and my wife had been together for a few years, but she had never talked to Daniel face to face. She's like, "I have so many questions for you." So right there at the graduation, it was the after deal, you know, whatever. And Daniel told my wife that story. And she gets in the car and she's like, "Wow." She's like, y'all's story like matches up perfectly. She's like, "There's no."
He confirmed it.
He's confirmed it 100%. And so is his family. But as his dad's gotten older, he didn't really like telling it because he said that it made him feel weird. And then he would not sleep good. So, you know, and he's one of them older generation. He didn't say I had nightmares. He doesn't admit that. He just says he couldn't sleep. You know, it's like, okay. And his brother's kind of the same way. His brother doesn't like talking about it. It's just kind of whatever. But one year there was a house. Okay. Now this is another story. This was really scary. There was a lot of weird stuff that happened in that town. There was a house that was a catty corner from his house. And there was a guy whose wife left him. And this happened when I was a teenager. I was like 16 or something like that. I remember I was living there with them before I moved to Austin the first time. And I remember him. He committed suicide. The poor guy, his wife left him. And he was drinking himself to death. And then they found him in his house and he had unalived himself. I don't know if I can say suicide. I don't know if I should say it on your show, whatever. But he had died. And so we were walking home from a party up the road. And I wouldn't walk the streets after what I saw, unless I was with three or four people. Like, I was like, told my friends, like, it was one or two of us. No way. I'm not going to do it, man. And so anyway, the plan was that night that we saw the dog man. I don't think I said this, but we were going to walk to my friend Daniel Henderson's house. And his house was a couple blocks up the road. And him and his brother used to work on bikes. Like, you know, they always had like parts and stuff for people's bikes. And so I was just going to grab one of the bikes at Henderson's because he always left them out there. And it was weird because he had his own little house next to his parents' house. So he had bikes out there all the time. And so I could always just grab one. I was really close. We were all close. We were very good friends. And he's not going to go, "Oh, you stole the bike." You know, he's just going to, I took a bike so I could ride it. You know, and I'll take it back the next day, whatever. And so Daniel Robles told me, he's like, I'll walk you up there to Henderson's and you can grab a bike and then ride the rest of the way home. I said, "Yeah, that's cool." So that's what we were doing until we saw that whatever. And so anyways, this is a different story, but it ties in. And we're walking, there's four of us walking down the street, and I was always real careful. And he lived down the street from the Moody governor's mansion where he grew up. Not the mansion. It's like a big house where Governor Moody grew up. A strange thing is I worked at a building that was haunted as hell that had his name too years later, but that's a whole nother story. But this, I'm walking in that house that had sat abandoned for a little while. They were doing some work on it or something. Nobody was living there. And the guy had unalived himself. And the light came on in the bedroom. And we all freaked. So my one friend, and Anthony, you met him, you know, over at HEB. Like, you know, we were there when that's the grocery store.
Yeah.
And Joe Anthony, he was real brave. He was like the brave one. He was like, "I don't care about all that." He's like, y'all might have seen some kind of werewolf, whatever. His brother claimed to have seen something like that. And I've talked about it on the show. But he's like, "Y'all might have seen that thing. I didn't see it. You know, I don't know if I believe it." He's teasing us. And I said, "Well, why don't you go up to that house right there? Because there's no electricity to that house." We talked to the people that were working there because they paid us like the weekend before to move some of the material out of there because they were taking down a wall or something. And I said, "Okay." So they gave us some money, you know, and I said to carry the hall, some stuff off with my friend's older brother, Junior. And so he says, yeah, I'm going to go and I'm going to look in the window. And I said, okay, go ahead. So we get over there. We get to Daniel's house. We get on the porch. We're all standing there. You know, there's three or four of us. His younger brother and his older brother came out. And they're like, what is Joe Anthony doing? I said, he's going to go look in the window over there in that house. And Daniel's brother's like, for what? And I said, because that light came on. And they're like, there's no electricity. I said, I know, but the light came on. So maybe there's a person squatting in there, right? But we didn't have homeless people around back. There was no homeless people out there. You know, it's not a big town, 15,000 people, whatever. I think at that time it was like 12,800, something like that. It was like 15,000, 16,000 now, or maybe more. And he says, okay, I'm going to go look. He goes and he looks in the window and he comes out and he's like, see, nothing there. And then we hear like this loud bang. And then Joe Anthony takes off running and comes running, you know, the house kind of catty corner like this. He takes off running back into my friend's yard. And we're like, what happened? He goes, dude, I heard a groan. And I was like, well, we heard a bang. He goes, yeah, I heard that too. But it was, I don't know what it was. And so fast forward, that was when I was like 16, right? So fast forward to 2019, December 2019. And I remember because it was right after your birthday, Anthony, and it was in between your birthday and Christmas. And and Anthony's birthday was the night that the same date that my grandmother passed away. It was December 19th, Anthony's birthday, December 19th. So I remember it was like right after Anthony's birthday, right before Christmas, and I had gone to Taylor to we were giving the meat. We have this food drive we do every year. We've only missed 1 year in the last like 16 years.
Every year for Christmas.
Every year for Christmas. So we were passing out the steaks and the summer sausages and everything to everybody, and we get them from this place called Thorndale Meat. Trey Felton, he catered my two conferences. Good guy, really good guy. He's got crazy stories too. He's written a couple books. But so anyway, Junior's doing work on that house, and I said, "Oh, yeah, the haunted house." He goes, "Yeah, yeah. I've been working on it, man. I've been doing some remodeling." So we start talking, and he tells me something interesting. He says, "You know," he says, "Yeah, I haven't heard anything or seen anything, but he always felt like there's something here watching me." He's telling me and Anthony this, and I said, "Yeah, well, this is where that guy, you know." He said, "Yeah," and he goes, "This has been a revolving door for years, you know." So it was in 1991 when Joe Anthony, you know, had gone over there and looked in the window. And now here it is, 1991. How many years is that until 2019, right? So it was a long time. 28 years later, you know, from the time that I had, you know, whatever. 29 years, I guess, from the time that I had seen the dog man, werewolf, whatever you want to call it. And so here's 28, 29 years, whatever, since these incidents. And we're standing there in the back of the house and we hear bang. You know, we're like, what the hell? It sounded just like that noise that we heard years ago, you know? So we walk into the master bedroom and the two sawhorses had fallen inward and the wood, there was no reason for that to fall like that. The house was not, unlevel or anything like that. It had good bones. You know, they built houses to last back then. This house was over 100 years old, you know, but it was built well, just like my friend's house. That whole neighborhood was ancient. And so the sawhorse had fallen in, and I was like, I looked at him, my friend's brother, or Junior. That's his brother's one that saw the dog man with me initially, but Junior saw it too. But I told Anthony, I said, dude, this place is haunted. It really is. So we're walking out and Junior brings it up. He goes, yeah. He goes, you ever told him about the wolf man that we saw that time that you and your brother, you and my brother brought home? I said, nah, yeah, I've told him. He knows the story. And he goes, yeah, man. And he looks at us and he's like, dude, I just remember that thing walking by the window. And there was like this black vapor coming off the back of its neck. And when he said that, I kind of paused and I was like, you know, this was like, I had started Paranormal Roundtable in April, my mother's birthday, April 13th. And this was in December. So we had been going for, you know, what is that, 8 months, something like that. And so I guess maybe 9 months, whatever. So I told him, I said, dude, I said, wait a minute, what? I said, Junior, there was black smoke? He's like, yeah, there was like this stuff coming. I don't know what it was. And I said, dude, I didn't see that. And I kind of paused and I was like, you've never told me that before. And he's like, well, you never asked because you've never really asked me, you know, point blank about what I saw. Because the night that we bear the night of his mother's funeral, Daniel's sons, his two oldest sons, one of them is named after me. His name is Josh. That's his second son. He named him after me. We were best friends. And his wife, you know, his wife's brother was one of our best friends too. Max Leindecker, rest in peace. He passed away last December. Great guy. And knew him forever. Not this December, December before. Time flies. And so Melissa Leindecker. But those are her sons. And so Josh tells me, he says, you know, Uncle Wolf, calls me Uncle Wolf. He's like, I wish I had your nickname instead of Josh, you know, my name. And I said, why? You don't like being a Josh? He says, I don't know. I don't like being Josh. I'd rather be Wolf. And I said, well, I've been both. And I can tell you, being Josh is just as good as being Wolf. And then his dad goes, he goes, don't talk like that. That's a good name. And in the Bible, it means leader. Because, you know, Daniel's a preacher, right? And he tells him, he says, look, I named him after you because Joshua was a leader. And, you know, Joshua is his name and he's my best friend. And so me and Melissa named him after, you know, Josh. So don't ever say you don't like that name. And I just kind of winked at him. And I said, well, it's cool to be Wolf too, you know, but I said, there is a story behind how I became Wolf. And Daniel's like, if you knew that story, you wouldn't think that name was just cool. And so his sons, they kind of, you know, roll their eyes like, okay. So his son is Daniel, his first son. That's his son. Then his second son is Josh, right? So they're named after me and him. So then Daniel says, his son, Daniel, he says, you know, he goes, I've heard the story before. He's like, I've heard, you know, his other brother tell, you know, he's heard him tell it and whatever. But I've never heard Uncle Wolf tell it. So I started to tell it. And then Daniel goes, how about I tell it? And I said, that would be awesome. I just didn't think he had it in him because his mother, we had just buried his mother. And there was 40, 50 people in that house. Now, when you clear out the living room and the dining room, it's pretty big. I mean, there's a big bunch of room. And so there's all these people there and everybody gets quiet. And Daniel tells that story just like he always has, just like I've always had. And after it's over, everybody's just sitting there kind of quiet and stunned. You know, and he goes, my mother always thought it was the devil. He goes, but I'll be honest. He goes, if I hadn't seen that thing, I might not have changed who I was. I might have stayed the same person, you know, bad person. He goes, so the Lord works in mysterious ways. And that's how he worded it. And I was sitting there, you know, and tired, had been slept maybe 2 hours in the last 2 days. I was really tired. The funeral and the reception and the burial, everything took a lot out of me. I was brokenhearted. His mother was like my second mom. I loved her a lot. She was such a sweet woman. Always had food on the stove for you, even though they were poor. They always had food. And she called me her white son. She always called me that. And so, you know, I looked at Josh and I said, do you still think that being called Wolf is a cool thing, you know? And because Daniel told the story, he says, Josh, you know, went around telling everybody about what we saw. I didn't. And so people started calling him Wolf Boy or Wolf Man. And you know, like the boy who saw Wolf, you know, they teased me a lot. And one of my coaches, he told me, he's like, you're taking, you know, a bunch of heat for this, you know. He's like, why don't you show everybody what a wolf really is? And just, you know. So eventually the name just stuck. It became Wolf. And I wore it as a badge of honor. And I'd get into fights and beat the hell out of people. And then I learned how to box. And first started boxing with Daniel's dad, who was a Golden Gloves. And we trained or whatever. And then years later, I was training people. And so I was a fighter for years and years. And I coached, did all kinds of stuff. And I think that having that experience, it was very profound for me. But now, you know, at the time I thought I saw this physical creature, but then his brother kind of changed it for me because I always thought there was more of a spiritual component to it. Daniel's mother always thought that from the time she saw it till the day she died, it was the Diablo, you know, and she didn't like that we called my brother Diablo.
she was always like, you need to change his name, you know. Don't call your hermanos the Diablo. You know, it's not no bueno. And I said, that's what we call him, you know. And so she didn't like that. She said, we need to change it. And she didn't like them calling me Wolf either. She refused to call me Wolf. She always called me Josh. And she'd always hug me and, you know, and be just very caring person. And I had a lot of good memories with him and his family, with Daniel's family. And was very close to all of his siblings, all of his brothers, all of his sisters. And there was only one of them that wasn't there. Actually, two. There was one of his sisters, and his younger brother was there, but I don't know what he saw. He never would really talk about it because I think it kind of bothered him. But he never really. And so I guess it was weird, like up to 2019, I had never really sat down with all of his siblings and just asked them exactly what it was each one of them saw. And I don't know why that is. I guess because I thought I knew the whole story because I saw what I saw. So that was it. And then here I was going like, damn, I need to go back and, you know, find out, you know. And I come to the conclusion that it's not completely physical. It was, you know, there was a paw print that was left and the picture was taken. And who knows where that picture is now? It was 1990. We know from measuring through the window. That's why we said it was about 7.5 feet tall, 7'5" something, you know. And it was a big, powerful son of a gun. I mean, it looked, you know. And I remember when it was on the fence, I remember like the foot in particular, it had like this weird claws that looked almost like a raptor, like from Jurassic Park or something. So I remember seeing years later, like the movie, you know, and I was like, what that looks like? That looks like it, that black, it kind of hung on the fence. That's not something a wolf has. That's not even something that a man mixed with a wolf would have. Why would it have that? Why would it have those big nails the way it did? Why did it look the way it did? Why did it have those, you know, huge shoulders? And it just didn't make sense. It was something that it just didn't make sense. And so I wrote a book, Werewolves and the Dogman Phenomena. And the author, Ken Gerhard, great guy, good friend of mine, helped me write it. So it's all my words, my work, whatever. But he basically like penned it. And he helped me interview people. And we interviewed like 22, or I don't know how many people made the cut exactly, but we ended up interviewing 22 to 26 people. I think it was 26. And then a couple people, we didn't use their stories or whatever. And a bunch of people from my hometown, we interviewed. We talked to them about, you know, what they had seen. And after it was done, Ken Gerhard, the reason I bring this up is because he's a very, like, a physical Bigfoot guy, you know. When we were done with this project, as he called it, right? I didn't call it that. But he says, he goes, I don't know what the hell this is. He goes, I just know it's scary. It's creepy as hell. And after that first conference, he was just like, I don't know what this is. You know, like, this is a weird thing, you know, like. So we wrote the book before the second conference, and I gave him the names, and I interviewed half of them. He interviewed the other half, and we wrote the Bigfoot book too. And I had somebody that helped me with that. And so we did the Bigfoot phenomena and the Dogman, and you know, the werewolves and the Dogman phenomena. And and I'm almost done with the vampire book, which I've redone like three times because I just can't. I want to get it right. Right. And they're all connected. 100% they're connected. And I had no idea how connected they are. You know, when you grab a tiger by the tail, sometimes you don't even know that that's a tiger's tail. You just know you're holding on to something. You don't know what it is. And then you think, oh, it's a tiger. Oh, shit. Then it turns out to be a dragon. Then you're so deep, you don't even know. That's kind of where I'm at now. But I don't care. The thing I know about all of this is that it's evil, 100%. I have not really interviewed anybody who could prove to me that they had a benevolent dogman encounter. Now, there is another creature called the Bear King. My wife wrote a song about it, and it's a legend here in Texas. But I've talked to a guy from Montana who has a story from 1888 about his great-great-grandfather, and him and his sister were telling me about it.
And they were telling me that there was this bear that may have been a shapeshifter that killed these four guys back in 1888. It's a story. So I've heard of these stories, and there's another one, the Black Hills of South Dakota, that I covered. I think that wasn't that. That was the bear. Wasn't it the bear man or something?
Yeah, it was.
And then we had Josh Ninocchio from What Lurks Beneath with the Yosemite, you know, stuff going on, the killings or whatever, with this disappearances within this bear-like creature. So there are a few different cases of different types of these creatures. Think of like the Kushtaka, the otter people up in Alaska. But not once has anybody been able to convince me that these things are just benevolent, shape-shifting, whatever, because shape-shifting demons are pretty, which is what I think they are, is not, they're not benevolent. And so people have asked me many times over the years, like, what do you believe? Do you, having had your own experience, and I only had the one, I know people who've had dozens, and they're like, what do you think it was? I said, I'm going to take Martha Robles' advice and pray about it and know that it is a Diablo, a devil, because that's what they are. Now, I've been asked this question too. Was it going to kill me? Yes, 100%. 100% that thing was going to kill me. It was contemplating how it was going to get over the fence. It was just going to jump, I guess. And that's why its foot was on the fence until my friend's dad came outside, brave guy. And he covered me coming inside. The police came. And I remember the police officer. He's a good guy. Years later, I don't want to say his name, but he was a police officer, 10 for 30 years. He got really drunk at a barbecue cook-off. He's deceased now, but he told me, my friend Scorpion and one of our workers at the barbecue cook-off years later, I think it was like 2009. And he was telling us about how many times he had had reports of this thing and his own encounter with it. And he said, I don't know what the hell it is, but it looks like a damn werewolf. He goes, and I've been called. He goes, and every time I just put prowler. He says, because in the late 60s, he goes, there was a rash of killings in the Black and Hispanic part of town in a place we called the Line. And the reason it was called the Line is because the white people said, hey, once you cross that line, you're on your own. Whatever happens to you down there happens to you. And the Black people said that this thing looked like a gorilla with a wolf's head. And that it was in the railroad cars, because our town's cotton town, right? The cotton gins. And it was a interchange, a bunch of railroad interchange. You know, they would ship the cotton out everywhere from the cotton gins. There was a cotton gin in Copeland, a cotton gin in Rice Crossing, cotton gin in Thrall, and all those cotton gins in Granger. That's where my grandmother's family is from, Granger, my dad's stepmom. Stories abound about these creatures, all these cotton gins. They shut down, you know, for a little season, whatever, they reopen, and people claim to see these creatures, like, lurking around, doing some weird stuff, you know. But anyway, these cotton, that was the big thing, right, until we started getting all our cotton from Egypt, which I don't want to get into that. That's a whole geopolitical mess that I could talk about. But there was these stories, and in the late 60s, there were three people who were found in these railroad cars. And I decided not to put it in the book. I probably should have. I don't know. I talked to a few people. It was me and Ken Gerhard, Sibylla Irwin, and a couple other people. We were talking. Sibylla did the artwork. And we were like, should we put that in the book, that chapter? Putting that in the book, who knows what could happen, because, you know, you might piss off the county. And so this police officer, and maybe he was just drunk. I, you know, who knows? But he said, I always believed your stories. You know, you two, you and your friend's story, you know. And he says, but I couldn't put it down as like, you saw a werewolf, you know. But he goes, I believed you. You know, and he started telling me, he says, there was some killings when I was a young cop. And he said that, you know, when I first started, they told us, you know, about these incidents. And they said, look, it didn't happen here. You write it up that the railroad cars came in and these were hobos and that they were already deceased when they got there. So it made less trouble for the county and for the city and, you know, let's, because we got to keep business moving. we don't want people being afraid and thinking that there's something running around down the railroad cars down there, because then they're not going to want to pack the railroads. I mean, the trains. So let's just, you know, let's keep it on the down low, you know. But he himself told me, and these two other guys I was with, he said that one of the people that he was, that he went into one of these railroad cars, it looked like they had been put through a blender. Something had not only unalived this person, but ate, like eaten a big chunk of him, leaving the head and part of the spine and some of the, you know, the remains of it, mostly skeletal, and other parts looked like they had been shredded. Like, so whatever it was able to kill and destroy. And you hear about this periodically with cattle. There's a lot of cattle around where I'm from too. And, you know, I saw some of these things, handiwork. And I know that that's real. I know it is. And if you go further to the east of there, that's where you start running into these weird troglodyte Bigfoot-like creatures that are just as aggressive and mean. And, you know, there were stories of this family. They had an Irish name. And they were driven off of their land by these creatures that looked like, you know, throwback, whatever, primitive. Because I went back to my roots and I said, you know what, I need to talk to the descendants, which would be my cousins, of my great-great uncles, and ask them what they knew about these troglodytes. And they inhabit some of the same areas in places like Apache Pass and Granger Lake. There's a story, and I don't know if anybody ever has looked this up. Now, everybody can look up the story of Friendship, the town that was flooded, intentionally destroyed to build Granger Dam off of San Gabriel River. But one of the stories I was told by an old timer, this was a Moldavian guy from Granger. And I interviewed this guy because his great granddaughter had seen one of these dogman creatures while she was jogging. And it was, she point blank told me, she's like, I believe she was a cross country sprinter. And it was summertime. She was a senior and she went to school in Waco and she was there visiting her grandmother for the summer. And she says, I was jogging like I always do. This is daylight. And she said, this thing came up out of one of these culverts and it was, she goes, it wanted to kill me. She said it looked like something out of Van Helsing. That was her words. And she told us this. I interviewed her, so did Armando, so did Tony. And she says, my grandfather can tell you a lot about these creatures. And so, gets me in touch with this guy. And I talked to him, you know, and he's like a 78-year-old man, you know. Or I'm sorry, 88 year old man at this point, 89, something like that. Very old. It's her great grandfather. And he had all of his faculties, like Anthony's grandmother's in her 90s. And you know how she talks just like normal. She just sounds like an older person. You wouldn't think, oh, she's 96. That's how this guy was. He was 89 years old. So I went out to Granger and I talked to him one day and I was there with my brother. We were talking to this guy. And he says, you don't understand what these things are. He goes, they're werewolves. He told me that point blank. He's like, I don't know why the dog man, I don't know what that is. I don't know that these are shapeshifters. He's like, these people came over here from the old country and they infected people and they turned into this. He said, but there were natives that were here first and they did it too. And they fought each other. He said, these creatures. And he said that the natives knew how to use the land and to sick these troglodyte, Bigfoot-like creatures on people. They knew how to get them going, right? He said that, and this is what he said. He said that these Bigfoot-like creatures rub themselves with ash. So they prize fire because the natives taught them how to use fire so that they would leave them alone. But when the white people came, he said these Bigfoot decided that they were going to kill and eat the white people because, you know, they were just building everywhere and taking over. And so that's what they did. And it was during a cholera epidemic that the McCullough's family that I, you know, talked about on the show was called, what was it called? Besieged
by Bigfoot.
Besieged by Bigfoot. And so the white people that came over from these old countries, right, from the Sudetenland and Czech Republic and all, it was Czechoslovakia. They fought back by bringing some of their own magic over here with shapeshifters that could do things. And then you bring the Mexicans in, and they were doing things too, what we call brujería, you know, La Chusa, Hombre Lobo, Quedejo. The Quedejo is another thing. I saw that 2 years later. Now, the reason I believe that I saw that after I saw the Dogman was because I think once you're on that level, you know, you're on this wavelength, you can see these things again. And oftentimes, and you know this, James, we've had many deep conversations, we're old friends. You interview somebody who's been an abductee or had out-of-body experiences or especially NDEs, near-death experiences. And anybody I ever talk to, I always ask them if they've had these. And if you talk to these people, you will start to see a pattern. They will have ghosts that they see. I mean, just spirits, right? They'll have all kinds of stuff. They will see Bigfoot. They'll see Dogman. And I don't think these people are just crazy and hallucinating. I think what it is they're tapping into that third eye. When I was young, my tías told me that I had the ojo dotado, the gift of the eye. And I thought it was more like a patrica, like a curse. I was like, this isn't a gift. I don't want this. Because when I was a kid, I could hear and see things, and I didn't like it. I didn't want to. I remember this old house we lived in out in the country, and I was sitting there, and I was playing with my He-Man. You remember He-Man, you know? And I was sitting there playing with those, and I remember I just saw the shadow of a man come up behind me. Now, I didn't have a ton of experiences in that house. Whatever was there, it really aggravated the women in the house. And I come to the conclusion that the guy's wife that had lived in that house, she had gone missing. She didn't go missing. Back then, it wasn't like it was a federal case in the 70s when somebody's wife went missing. It was like, you know, oh, well, she just packed up and moved away. You know, we didn't have the internet and all that. And so, you know, people just, well, his wife left him. She went back to wherever she came from. Well, yeah, she went to Lubbock to be with, you know, the guy she was, whatever. So I think that he unalived her. I really felt like he had done something to her, because I would hear a woman crying sometimes, and then I would hear this man's voice. And so the women in that house, my great aunt stayed with us for a little while. My aunts, when they would come over, or my sister or her friend, my sisters and their friends, they would have stuff happen to them. But I remember one Thanksgiving, the night before Thanksgiving, my cousins had come to visit, and they all stayed the night. And it was a pretty decent sized house. And there was this thing walking down the hallway, and it was dragging something. And all we saw was this black shadow. There were six of us boys, and there were seven girls in the bedroom down the hall. And we were little kids. I was like in fourth grade, something like that. And my one cousin was a little younger than me, Paul. He was him and Sean. They were the only two younger than me. And everybody else was older than me. And there was six of us. And so I remember like a couple of my older cousins were in the other bedroom. And I thought maybe they were playing a game, like messing with us, right? Trying to scare the younger kids. And then I realized, like, no, this is the spirit that lives in this house. And it was a big man, and he was dragging a bag behind him. So that was the kind of stuff I saw. And I told my mom, I said, Mom, I don't like this. I don't want this. So I shut it off. I think I walled it off. And turns out that there were 17 cats that had been put into that pond. We had a pond in between ours and the neighbor's house. So the neighbors decided to clean out that pond, and they found the remains of 17 cats. There were three or four of the neighbor's cats that had drowned in that pond when we were there. And my dad was like, okay, I don't know what's going on. He told my sisters and everybody, quit scaring the younger kids or whatever. Stop when your cousins come over, quit scaring them, whatever. And they're like, we're not. My sister claimed to have seen a man floating by her window, which would be, you know, weird anyway, but it's on the second floor. It's a, you know, two-story house. And my other sister, she was there one time. She claimed that she saw a elf-like creature sitting in a tree. So this was weird stuff, right? This is one particular house. And so we moved away from that house.
Just
thank God.
Hold that thought right there. We reached the end of the first segment, Josh. And we're just getting started because I'm really getting into this. To our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member. We'll see you at the top of the next segment. And of course, we'll provide all of Josh's website information and his YouTube channel. We'll be right back.